paper.
Welcome to episode 37 of Paper Talk, a monthly series of podcast interviews featuring artists and professionals who are working in the field of hand papermaking and paper art. I'm Helen Hebert, and today I'm talking with Peter Dahmen, an artist and designer based in Dortmund, Germany. I discovered Peter's work on the internet, which is how he has become well-known in the field of pop-ups and has connected with clients around the world. We talk about the first pop-up book he saw in a bookstore as a child, how that interest was rekindled about 10 years later when he was studying communication design at the university, and how he became a YouTube sensation over 20 years later. Peter described some really interesting projects he's been involved in, from designing a pop-up wall for a car manufacturer to creating a pop-up book for a magician, along with the challenges and breakthroughs that he's made with new paper and new technologies. Enjoy our conversation. Well, Peter Dahmen, welcome to Paper Talk. It's so great to have you. And I remember contacting you. It must have been around 2012. I featured you in the gallery of my book, Playing with Pop-Ups. And then I had the pleasure of meeting you last fall in Kansas City at the Movable Book Society conference. Welcome.
Welcome, Helen. It's so nice to see you again now on the video screen. I wish I could be at your place today. Yes, I remember when you first contacted me, and I was so honored to be part of your book, because I didn't expect that professionals would contact me to join this kind of publications. So I'm very happy. Thank you for doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's start kind of at the beginning, how you first got interested in paper and paper engineering.
Mm-hmm. Actually, I played with paper, to use your term, playing with paper, already as a child. But as a child, I did not create pop-ups. I was building 3D objects, small playing toys, things like that. But I remember that I saw my first pop-up book in a bookstore, and I couldn't afford it from my pocket money. So after school, I always went to that bookstore and flipped the pages and tried everything out and put it back into the shelf and went home. And maybe you know that book. Do you want to know?
Yeah, what book?
Hound in America, it's called Haunted House by Jan Pienowski, I think.
Okay, yeah.
I pronounced it wrong. And I love that, and I loved all the effects, and I tried to rebuild them at home, but of course I failed, of course. But somehow I figured that out. But I didn't think about pop-ups too much as a child.
Right.
But I decided to study graphic designs, communication designs, and it's now jumped to the year when I was 19 years old. Mm-hmm. And I started to study, and the courses in the first 1.5 years are very general. So it's not about creating packaging or creating something that's a real advertising for a real company, but you do color theory and general designing stuff. And in the year, I remember it exactly, in the year 1989, so pretty much exact 30 years ago from today.
Yeah.
Actually, it was in autumn, but let's pretend it was 30 years. We had a task, and it was create three-dimensional things from paper and paperboard. And I thought, wow, I have to do this workshop. I love it. But I lived so close to the university that I walked there, or I went by train or a local underground. And I thought, oh no, I have to transport a box of paper. And what will happen if it's raining and or if a storm comes? So I thought, oh no, I cannot do this project. But then I had the idea, maybe I do it in pieces and assemble it at the university. And then, of course, it came to my mind, why not create it as a pop-up?
Right.
But I had no idea how to start. In 1989, maybe, I don't know, the internet was invented, but I had no idea that it existed. I had a library, and of course the library of the university, but they had no certain books about that topic.
Right.
So what could I do? I tried to teach myself and to try it out. I didn't have much money, but I had time and passion. So by trial and error, I created my first three-dimensional supersized paper sculpture, pop-up paper sculpture, and could transport it very easily and showed it to my professor. And he said, well, that's cool, go ahead. And my main idea originally was that at the end of the semester, I wanted to create a pop-up book or a crazy scene with the castle or something which shows things from reality. But actually, my abstract series was so interesting that my professor said, no, this is your project for this 6 months. So I created every week. No, my aim was to create every week a new paper engineering project, which has a different opening mechanism and which brings the movement, which expresses the movement in the best possible way. So I used rhythm and series. So it's not just one element that's moving, but 16 in a row or something. So try to push the limit and to show what's possible in paper engineering, even if I did not know the expression back then. The word paper engineering, I learned it, I don't know, 5 years ago. I have no idea. I don't know if I knew the expression pop-up. I think I just called this a foldable object in Germany, club object, something that you can unfold.
Right, right. And let's mention that you're in Dortmund, Germany, right?
Oh, yes, we didn't mention that, yes. Yeah. And then I had I made a, I don't know the expression, a degree. At the end of the semester, the professor said, okay, it's okay. And I put it away and I didn't show this to anybody of my clients for 20 years. After I finished my studies, I had my pop-ups, but and I've personally and privately, I worked on these, but I became a traditional, what you call a graphic designer. So I worked on the surfaces only. So I made book covers, advertising, brochures, book designs, so the interior pages, but no pop-up book.
And so that was just the one class that you did that in?
Yes.
You didn't continue. You just did the normal design stuff.
Yes, that's it. And there was no professor or
taught me.
Of course, I was, from that point on, I was interested in that stuff. So when I noticed Masahiro Shatani, of course, I know many of his books. And as soon as my library had some of these, I could find them. So I was always very interested in that topic. But I couldn't imagine that this could be a profession, that could be used to make a living out of that.
Right.
And 20 years later, and it's in the year 2009, I made a personal project for a friend. And she doesn't live in my city. And, you know, when you send out birthday greetings, you want them to arrive on the certain day.
Right.
So I finished a pop-up card for her. But I couldn't send it out on that day because it would arrive too early. So I showed it on the same evening to some designer friends and said, look, this is what I'm doing. And I'm not working for clients. Ta-da! And they said, wow, you have to show this to the world. And I said, hey, nobody's going to buy it. Nobody needs that. That's luxury. It's too complicated. Mm-hmm. And they said, it was 2009. They said, maybe, Peter, you've heard of this thing they call the internet that we can read in the newspaper all day, but maybe you should try that out and put that online. And I was not convinced. I was really kind of, let's give it a try. It was really not my strategy to become famous or professional. It was just, okay, let's just try it out. And what I did, I had my, actually, I think I made about 14 projects during my studies, but many of them look awful and ugly. Most of them didn't work at all, but I had some that I liked very good. So I decided to just record 6 of them and I made a very short video clip, 60 seconds. And this is the only strategy that I had. I named this video 6 amazing paper pop-up sculptures. Uh-huh. So I had the word pop-up in it, I had amazing in it, and 6 because it's 6.
Right.
And if I would have known how to do that, I would have uploaded it to my website and nobody would have noticed it. But because I didn't know how to upload a video on your own website, it was technically easier to upload it on YouTube.
Right.
Just to put the link on your website. And that was the best thing that I could do, because I sent out about 50 emails to say, hey, people, look what I've done. And so I was expecting to receive about, let's say, 30 hits, 30 views on that video. But after a week, I had 1,000. Mm-hmm. After a month, I had 8,000 views. After a year, it was 100,000 views. And after 2 years, it was 1 million views on that single video.
Wow.
And during the process, I started to create more videos just for YouTube and not for business. But through this popularity on YouTube, I received my first commercial commission to create a pop-up.
Uh-huh.
Should I go on talking or do you want to ask me some questions?
No, you're doing a great job. So where was that client based?
That's very interesting, because actually there were two jobs.
Yeah.
They're both absolutely crazy. One was from Munich in Germany, mm-hmm. for a huge car company, automotive company. And you can find it on my website so I can announce it. It was for Mini Cooper. Uh-huh. BMW, but they have another brand, the Mini car, Mini Cooper, and they wanted to build a supersize pop-up wall, 10.5 meters wide and more than 5 meters high. And the guy who called me, it was not from the advertising agency, but from the booth construction company, and he said, they hired us and we are professionals, so we can build it, but we need plans how to construct a pop-up that actually unfolds, because we have to hide the scenery between two walls and we have only, don't know, 30 centimeters. But when it opens, it shall be 1 meter deep. So we need your help. Can you do it? And I was like, yes, of course I can. I was, of course, scared.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I thought, wow, it's all about you. I asked them, how could you find me? And they said, oh, we found your video on YouTube.
Wow.
And actually, I had made some cards for a commercial. There is a card production company in my city. And actually, I studied with the owner of this company. And he creates cards, also 3D cards, but they're not that complicated. Mm-hmm. It's the 90-degree style and much easier stuff. Mm-hmm. But he had the request to create a complex pop-up card for a stadium, for a football stadium in Munich. And that was the second reason why this guy found me. He's a fan of that football club,
right.
Bought this card, found me on the internet, saw my crazy video and said, okay, you're the man. And the other guy was Marco Tempest. He's a magician. He lives in New York. Mm-hmm. And he's originally from Switzerland, but he found me also on the internet. Of the internet, and he asked me to do this theme, a book that he can use on a stage to present, to tell a story, a book that is enriched with projection mapping. And this both happened by the end of 2011. So both jobs were, in Germany, you see, it's beyond good and evil. It's not what you're expecting.
Right.
It's bigger than you ever thought you could get. And it was, they were both really scary. And they were both not things from an edition. So for the wall, I only would build the small scale model, mm-hmm. send it to the booth, and of course the data behind that, send it to the booth construction company, and they will build it in huge size.
Right.
And with Marco Tempest, it was just, build it once, send it over to New York. So
right.
I could try as hard as I wanted. And when I was finished, there was no thinking about production runs, printing, assembling, because I would have done all the assembling.
Right. So they were both one of a kind.
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
Yeah. Wow.
So actually, I feared That was at the same time the beginning of my career and at the same time the end of it, because what could happen next? If you're done, the I have to say it was the probably biggest pop-up card in the world, because of course they did not inform the Guinness Book of Records because the event was about cars and not about pop-up walls. Right. So it was just the decoration. Mm-hmm. So whenever a journalist tells about this project, I always have to point out, please write probably. You have to include the word probably into your story because we have no proof.
Yeah, and the actual piece was constructed of wood?
Oh, no, this big paper? One, it was not really. It was a steel. You can think of 5 garage doors. It was 5 doors that you use to close the garage.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
It actually, the construction, it was so heavy. It was 2 tons of weight. And the pop-up constructions which sat on this wall, the weight was 250 kilogram. Wow. And it was made from a material that it's, I don't know if it, the same expression exists in America. It's aluminium debond. So it's foam colored with aluminium on both sides. And you cannot cut it with the scissors. You have to use a CNC machine to cut it out. So that's why they needed vectorized data. So, and there was no trial and error. They only had one chance to bring this to life. And it was opened only for the rehearsal. I think they made 3 or 4 rehearsals and then the main rehearsal and then the presentation. And that was it.
Wow. And did you get to go see it or did you just
Yes.
see
when you have the chance to visit my website, actually, I was the only journalist who did not record the cars, but who focused only on the back wall. So I had my own footage and it was really important because with the advertising agency, they told me in advance, oh, Peter, you don't have to come to this place because there will be footage all over the internet. You will find it. Mm. And I asked them if I could be invited. And they sent me a ticket so I could be this is not an open event because it's only for press and media journalist people, but I got an entrance card and I brought my really, really, it's absolutely semi-professional equipment. Everybody was there with TV camera equipment and I had my private camera there, but hey, I have my own footage and so I could cut it to the size that I wanted. So in my version, you only see the wall opening and then the cars driving in and that's it.
Perfect, perfect.
I'm the copyright owner, I'm allowed to use it. That would have been a problem. I think they wouldn't have shared it with
right,
me.
Using their video. Very smart. So you thought that might be the end, but then what happened?
When I found out that many people were visiting my watching my YouTube videos and then coming back to my website, mm-hmm. The first thing that I did, I was rearranging my website. So when I started this, I presented myself as a self-employed freelancing graphic designer. So you would find a lot of illustrations and other stuff that I'm doing. And if you click through the pages, you would finally end up and find some paper engineering. So I mixed it around. So from that moment on, you would see the paper engineering projects at the very first, when you open my website. But for the first years, I still kept all the other stuff on my page. So you would still find all other projects. But I changed that over the years when I found out that the percentage of paper engineering projects, commercial things, would rise and the other projects, they did not actually go down. But when I had only limited time and I had the choice to do a usual job, like a graphic design job, can you do a brochure, can you do a logo, can you do a corporate design? And at the same time, somebody would ask me to do a pop-up card, I would always choose the pop-up card project. And so the percentage of paper engineering projects was extremely rising. And so I decided when people to present myself as a professional paper engineer on my website, because over the years I had enough reference projects. When I started, I only had my student jobs.
Right.
I could show this is a real project that I have done. It's not just a concept that I've done it originally. And you can see it on my website. So I opened the starting page now shows not just one, but several projects, and they're all real. So that's how I could switch. And for, I think, since about 4 years, I'm only accepting projects that involve paper engineering, but sometimes I still do the graphic design as well. So I'm not always needing an external illustrator or graphic designer. Sometimes I'm doing everything myself. Oh, very often. At the MoMA, the cards that I'm doing for MoMA store, for example, of course I'm not doing just the paper engineering, but it's everything that comes from my hands.
Right, right. So let's talk about that for a minute. How did you get connected with MoMA?
Oh, I was so happy, actually.
This is the Museum of Modern Art in New York, who has produced pop-up cards for decades. I mean, I remember in the late 1980s, I'm just a little bit older than you, I think. I was living in New York City and knew some designers that were designing cards for MoMA.
By the way, I'm 51 to this year, so I will become 52 in June. So okay. I think I'm not that much younger, probably.
Yeah, I'm 53. Okay.
Oh, okay. when I received an email, and thank you for making clear that MoMA is not morning magazine, because a friend of mine, she said, what are you talking about morning? I was watching this morning show on television. I never see it. Now it's Museum of Modern Art. Yeah. I received an email which said, Peter, we saw your videos on YouTube. Once again, we saw your videos on YouTube. We love what you do. Can you send us some of your unpublished things, if you have some? And I replied, unfortunately, there is nothing on shelf, but I can create something for you. Mm-hmm. And that's what they do every year. Mm-hmm. You need an invitation. I think it's a kind of semi-open invitation. So in general, I think every designer could join, but you have to be able to create professional data, professional mock-ups that they don't need to revise. So they just look at the design, and if they like it, they order the files that are ready for production. So that's the part that you have to do on your own. There's no help from them.
I see.
So they sent me this email. I said, Peter, we would love you to send us some designs. And my first question was, wait, it's just, the deadline was, I don't know, 2 months or 10 weeks. And I said, how many designs do you expect? Because at the moment I have another project. I wish I could stop it to work for you. But they said, no worries. We have designers who send us just one design each year. We have designers who send us 30 designs. But the jury will always pick only the ones we like best. So you don't have a bigger chance. Of course, if you send three, there is a bigger chance that one of those will win. But you don't have to. So I think I remember it well. I sent them two designs. I haven't had the time to create more than two. That's another, and I think it's interesting because everybody who only sees the final versions, sometimes people say, oh, that's a nice idea. I might have had that idea too. I could have done that too.
Right.
Yes, when I'm finished, I could also say, yeah, I could have done that too. Maybe I could have finished this project within 2 days. But actually, before you create something nice, beautiful, and working, it's a lot of work and a lot of trial and error to create things that are not working. So at the end, when you know how it looks good and when you know that it's working, you could have shortened the process dramatically, but you cannot do that in advance. So,
right. That's important. Mm-hmm.
I was happy to send them two cards, and I was extremely happy when they do three jury rounds. So the first feedback, you will usually you send them the designs in April. So in about 3 weeks from today, I have to send them new ones, and they will inform the designers in about mid-June if they like it or not. Sometimes you get a glimpse in May already when they say, we like the technical design, but maybe you want to change the color from red to green. Mm-hmm. So you build another mock-up. And the final decision is made no earlier than in, I think, by the end of September. So everything can happen. It can still happen that they say, in the first round, we loved it, but now we have a bigger jury and we decided to sort it out. Or maybe it will be put on hold. So we'll give it to the jury next year. I'm a lucky one because this happened to me only once. So in the first invitation that I received from them was in 2015. Mm-hmm. I sent them two designs. They were published in 2016. And from that time on, I had always one or more new products in the range. And as soon as they are sold out, they don't produce them anymore. So you have, they keep their assortment very fresh, very young. So you won't find designs that are older than, I think, 3 years. They start with, I think, 4,000 boxes. But when they announced the new designs in January, mm-hmm. they are actually available for the resellers, I think, in August of the same year. Mm-hmm. And I think they put it on their online store, online shops, when Christmas time begins, at end September or something. But right. they already have a feeling how much the store owners will order. So maybe they adjust the production run to the orders. So maybe they will produce fewer or more, depending on the demands that they will receive right. in January. So right. actually, I know from some designs that I did from the royalties that they sold 4,000 boxes. So that's why
right.
I know.
Right.
Okay. They will pay in advance, which mm-hmm. is not some hundred euro, not euros, but dollars. Mm-hmm. But this will be, I don't know the English expression, but they count it in when they give you the license fee.
They have to earn that back before they start paying you royalties.
So, yes. And there are, it's a fixed percentage that you get from each card that they sell.
Right.
But of course, when they give a discount on their cards, my earnings will have the same discount. So I cannot name you concrete numbers.
I'll
always have to look it up afterwards. And last year, a good thing happened. I was confused because one of my designs disappeared from the online store, and I wrote an email to one of my contact person and said, "Hey, what's going on? It's Christmas time and my cards are not available." And she said, "No worries, we are reproducing them. They will be available again. We produced some, I don't know, some thousand boxes on top of the ones that you already produced." So
they were sold.
They were already sold, and they had time enough to produce them again, which is
cool.
Not always possible because they're not produced locally in New York. So they get them from far away, and so you have to count in the time for shipping. It needs some weeks to arrive in New York.
Right, of course. I want to talk about, you were talking about sending mock-ups and things like that. What is your system? Is it all on the computer? Or do you send physical mock-ups? And I want to hear about the papers that you use because this is called mm-hmm. Paper Talk.
Oh, yes, of course. So basically, let's also start with the designing process mm-hmm. because that's a very common question when people ask me, what computer program are you using?
Right.
And straight answer is, for the design process, I would not even use or need a computer. Because the first mock-ups are very basic. I try it out, and I don't need all the... It would be too crazy to work with a computer mouse to steer the cursor on the screen when you just can take your paper in your hands and just cut off the edge.
Right.
So I build it, and I build it very roughly.
Mm-hmm.
And when it's working, I go into the next step and refine it, make it more complicated. And when a pop-up card or pop-up design has more than one movement, I don't create them in one step, but I put it on top of each other. So in the first...
I want to ask one question first.
Brilliant.
Do you do any sketching first?
No, I was surprised. When we were in Kansas City, I was surprised to see colleagues who have a sketch of the finished thing that they're going to build. It's impossible for me. I don't have any idea how it will look. And when I have the artistic license, the freedom to do something that I like, if I'm not bound to create a certain building, of course, when I need to create a pop-up that resembles a certain building, then some computer stuff is involved because I need to have the measurements of the building, the height, right, and the facade, things like that. But when I'm starting with the Christmas card for the MoMA store, I start with a nice movement. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm thinking of, let's say it's a star or a Christmas tree. Of course, if for a Christmas tree, I will decide, will it stand upright or will it be laying flat on the page and you have to lift the card to see it. But then I literally try it out. And my first tree, maybe it's just a triangle and it looks boring. And then mm-hmm. I add up more details. And then it can happen that I say, oh, wow, this movement reminds me of something else, and mm-hmm. I completely forget about the Christmas tree and decide this to be Santa Claus sitting in his sleigh riding through the sky, and I go that way. And mm-hmm. that's the inspiration that doesn't come from thinking about it, but from doing it.
Right.
And that leads to completely different solutions.
Sure.
And sometimes it happens, I made an abstract model. I just thought about confetti popping out of the page. But of course, they had to be attached to the double page. So they're like lollipops sitting on sticks. So mm-hmm. you have circles and those holders. And I mm-hmm. sent it to MoMA and they said, wow, that looks like a bunch of flowers. So why don't you make this part of grass with poppies? And so I changed my design. Now it's some poppies. I love this design, but the initial idea was not to create flowers.
Right.
Just worked the other way.
Yeah.
And if somebody would have asked me to do flowers, I wouldn't have come up with this technical solution.
Hey, listeners, let's take a little break here. And I want to tell you about my upcoming online class called Flexible Book Structures. Do you crave the inspiration you get from the act of making? Love books and paper? Have a desire to connect with others who share these same goals? Join me in creating a series of flexible book structures that fold and unfold, collapse and expand, inflate and deflate. Let's wonder collectively about what a book is. We will create 6 book objects, the equivalent of a week-long workshop with me in person, during this 6-week online class, which begins April 10th. Work from the comfort of your own home or studio at any time throughout the week, and hop into the classroom to ask questions and share your projects and ideas in a supportive and creative online community. Watch my promotional video to learn more and register at helenhebertstudio.com/shop/flexible-book-structures-online-class. That's a mouthful. Now back to the episode.
Now, I love the design, and then comes the moment when I say, okay, it's working. That's the moment when the computer is involved. So mm-hmm. I don't destroy, but detach all the elements.
Mm-hmm.
There's a special glue. It's a kind of tape that's on a tape dispenser, but no tape, just glue. And it's very sticky, but when you're slowly enough, you can peel it off without destroying the pieces. Unfortunately, it's no longer produced. Otherwise, I would tell you the name. But
right.
I bought, I think, 300 rolls. until the end of my career, I think I'm happy with that. So I detach the pieces, put them flat, because that's what they have to be, flat.
Right, right.
Scan them on my flatbed scanner. And then I create vector data in Adobe Illustrator. I could use any other vector software. And from that moment on, when it has, in the first steps, I still don't cut them out by a machine, but I print them and cut them out by scissors, because I just need to know that for the refining process, that I'm still working with the same data. And then when I'm happy with all the details, then I design, let's call them the graphical details, because sometimes the outline has curves and tiny swirls or leaves. These are left out completely in the first designing process because they're just, let's call it, for beauty reasons, but they have an impact on the technique. It will be weaker.
Sure.
They may tangle up. The pieces might touching each other. So I have to still try that out. And that's when I cut them, the elements with a cutting plotter. It's a machine that uses a blade.
Right.
Makes a lot of noise, and it needs about, depending on the complexity, between 5 minutes and don't know, 10 minutes to cut a piece out. Okay, sometimes just a minute, really depends. But when the machine needs a minute, I will rather cut it by hand. So I only use it for the complex parts. Okay. And then I can refine anything. And that's another thing that I can prove that my data is correct. So the final, when everything is fixed, I will do a final cutout with my cutting plotter, usually from mic paper, to make sure that all my data is correct and that I don't make a mistake and I shifted a folding line or something. And the colored mock-up is usually not made from the real paper because I'm using an inkjet printer. And the paper that I can use for this printer is too weak. So this is always a compromise, but of course the clients want to see a colored model. Right. So usually I send two mock-ups. One is the colored version, which is working, but not as good as the white version, which is the correct paper.
Now, and so you're about saying the color, the ink doesn't print as well on the white paper. Is that the reason?
The inkjet printer makes beautiful, it's not that I like the colors, but it's... what's the word? It's calibrated. So my inkjet printer prints with the same CMYK colors. It's not actual for proofreading or for proof control, but it's very, very close. So if the green looks too cold, I see it and I can change it. And I'm not only looking at the colors on the computer because, you know, in printing, colors may look different. So it's a kind of control that I have about the colors.
Right.
But the inkjet printer needs a certain covered surface. So I think there's a lot of chalk or something which is very dry. And from the technical point of view, talking about paper specifications, paper that you can use best for mass production of pop-up cards is paper that is called folding box board or... what's the other expression? I have to look it up for a moment. A solid bleached board. So these boards are, I like to call them engineered for packaging. Everybody knows them from praline or chocolate boxes, the high quality chocolate boxes, or cigarette boxes. Mm-hmm. Not the soft packs, of course. And you know, you can open and close such boxes 100 times without tearing, without breaking. And the technique behind this paper is that it's made in the production process from different layers that have different specifications with long and short fibers. I don't want to dig too deep into this process, but it's perfectly engineered to make a perfect folding line. And that's another difference between my mock-ups and the final production things, because my cutting plotter, he cannot do at all perfect folding lines. What it can do is to do a partial cut, so it damages the paper by destroying half of the surface. And of course we don't want to have it in the production. So with a perfect folding line, I have to mimic.
We call that scoring. I just want to clear
You're right.
Scoring. Yes, you're right. Folding line, you're talking about scoring versus your plotter doesn't score, it actually cuts. Which makes sense, because it's a knife. It's a different tool.
That's it.
Yeah.
And I do this, the delicate scorings, I do them by hand, and I'm using an empty ball pen. So in order just to press the paper and to loosen the fibers.
Right.
And that's why even my mock-ups are not machine-made, but still handmade even for the scorings. Okay, then I know my data is correct, and I have my colored mock-up and sometimes my white mock-up from different paper. And I send all this to the production company or to my client, and they will send it to the production company themselves. This, I talked about solid bleach board or folding box board. Actually, I didn't know that this board exists because I just used the paper that I had accessible. Many people on YouTube ask me, I want to do paper engineering, which paper should I use? Right. And my general answer is, just use the paper that you have access to. It needs to be stiff enough so it doesn't collapse when you just lift the paper.
Right.
So unfortunately, I know, Helen, you're doing a lot of handcrafted papers in the kind of aquarelle paper. So unfortunately, some of those papers are too soft.
Right. But they're limp. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the problem. Mm-hmm. But if you have a paper that is stiff enough, I invite people to just use paper that they have from packaging. Maybe you make you buy a shirt, mm-hmm, and you don't throw away the packaging, but you use it because it's maybe stiff enough,
right,
and you can create a pop-up card from that. But I was invited by a huge paper mill from Sweden, and they explained me about their certain paperboard that they produce, and I don't know if I'm allowed to call the name in your podcast.
Yeah.
It was Egesund, and I was invited to do something with their paper. And maybe you have seen the Snowflake project on my website. I hope I gave you one when I visited you in Kansas. Did I?
I got one. I attended the podcast or something. I got it in the mail. So this is a fantastic project. Everybody has to look up online. There's a great video of Peter in the snow with the paper snowflake.
Oh, that's a funny. let me tell you this in advance. When everything was finished, they called me and said, "We want to do an image video of the creation of this card. We would like to fly you in, but it has to be next week. Can you come?" I said, "Okay, I'm happy to fly in." And they said, "We don't know if it will be snowing. It's not snowing now." So they made two scripts. One with Peter Dahmen looking out of the window, thinking and dreaming of snow. And the other version was Peter Dahmen walking through Swedish snow. And when I arrived on the day it started, the day before it started snowing, on the day it stopped snowing, so we had this winter wonderland to record this video. And 5 days later, when I was already back home, all the snow was gone. It was just the first snow in winter that day. Okay.
Wow.
This is
so. How did they find you? How did they find you? Egesund.
Over the internet. Okay. Once again, it was really. And actually, it happens very, very rarely that somebody finds me through an event that I personally attended. Many people search the internet, look up for words they maybe imagine, then they find the term pop-up card, maybe they find the term pop-up sculpture, and then they will probably find my videos, and then they will find my website. That's how it goes. They dig into the project with very global search words, mm-hmm, don't fit, then they find some project they like, they learn the term pop-up card, they search for pop-up card, and they find my videos, and then they're on my website. And of course, nowadays, since I'm a little more popular now, sometimes I get recommendations.
People
say, if you need a paper engineer, why don't you ask Peter Dahmen?
Right.
But so Egesund knew me from my videos, and I received an email, and we made a Skype call, and I had the artistic license to do whatever I wanted to do, so I didn't need to have a pop-up card. But what I loved in the paper that they produce, that you can literally fold it thousands of times without breaking, but it's still very stiff. So if you don't create a score, it won't be folded on any part else but the score that you created. And by chance, it was the year when I also started a cooperation with a company who invented a laser cutting machine that can do perfect scores, but digitally, which is a new invention. Usually you have to build a die cutting tool, but this is an analog tool. But with digital cutting and digital creasing, we had the chance to try the layout on the machine in an edition of just two and not 200,000, to just try it if it's working. And so we could make the connections of the Snowflake project. Let me describe it. It's a nothing else than seven hexagons that are connected. It's really as boring as that. But to put this into practice, it was a real challenge, because when I showed this to a technical engineer who is in the paper industry, he said, "Peter, forget it. It cannot be done. It will break." And I said, "No, I made a mock-up myself with Iggesund on paper. Or let's you can also use other brands. It's but it, with a paper that's made for folding boxes, mm-hmm. and if you use the right paper, you can really you can make just tiny connections, and it will be working." Mm-hmm. And so we pushed the limits to the extremes, and it was very necessary to build very early test versions to see which actual paper we would use. So we had a choice in 20 gram steps. So we tried 200, 220, blah, 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 until and to 340 grams, and we found which worked best. And that's something I learned over the years. Even with all your experience, or even with my experience, mm-hmm. I'm still learning, and you will always, you have to try it out with a real project on the real paper, with the real printing, the real coating. A friend of mine experienced a horrible surprise because the printer didn't know that the pieces were going to be attached with glue. And so as a super service, he put a coating on the whole pages. Nobody knew that. And they use the same glue as always, and the pieces fall apart. Yeah. So you have to make sure that you make the tests with the same properties like the final design, the final product. I came up with the idea of those foldable snowflake. And the crazy thing is, since you can look through all those hexagons, they have, I don't know how many there are, but hundreds of cutouts. They could not be technically done with a die cutting tool, because then they would have been pressed out by hand manually.
Oh yeah.
But with the laser cutting machine, they could be just sucked up by a vacuum, because it's transported in a kind of a mesh with big holes in it, and a hovercraft something vacuum just sucks up the pieces. So it's on the start of the machine, you insert the printed boards, and on the end of the machine, you receive all those cutout pieces ready. You just need to fold them, and you can fold them in more than 22,000 different ways.
Yeah, let me describe this. It's seven hexagons that are connected, and you can fold them up and overlap them and fold them backwards or forwards to create whatever number you just said, variations.
Since you can look from the front and from the back, and it's printed in different colors, it's just blue tones, but different blue tones on the front and on the back, and different, even we put some glossy and some silver shining coatings on both pages, you can variate in more, you can create more than 44,000 different snowflake images. So that's a story, isn't it?
That's really that's fantastic. Crazy. And we'll put a link to all of these projects in the show notes. So we're going to wind down, but I want to talk about your video tutorials online. I think we started talking about that at the beginning, but we didn't. No. So you went on to YouTube, but you also have lots of video tutorials because people were asking you. And so, tell us about those and how those serve you. And
when I made my very first video, as I told you, it was surprisingly successful. Really, yeah. I was completely blown away, and I absolutely did not expect that. And in the first year, in 2000, I put it online on the 2nd January of 2010. So it was really almost 1 year mm-hmm. that it was online, and it was so popular. It motivated me to create more pop-ups just for YouTube. So I made two more pop-ups that are not tutorials. It's one shows a colored peacock, because one of the most popular comments is, "Hey, you're nice. Your pop-ups are nice, but they would look even better if they would be in full color. So why don't you just put online those boring white things?" And I said, "Okay, I will do some really colorful thing." That's where I made the pop-up of the peacock. Mm-hmm. Then I had a local project of a tower here in the city where I live in Dortmund. I made this U tower. It's not an underground station, but an actual tower which has a U on top. So I made this as well. And I was flooded with comments which said, you have to explain that. So by the end of the year, I was so thankful and I thought, I have to give the community something back because mm-hmm. my popularity in my business, I have to thank really, I have to thank the online community for supporting me with their clicks and their views. And I said, okay, I will release one of my, let's call it the secret. I will release how I made one of my big pop-up sculptures. I made a slightly easier and smaller version. So you just need an A4 page. Mm-hmm. I didn't think of the US sizes. My newer tutorials, they can all be printed in letter or in A4, but at that time I was just new to that business. So I made a very short tutorial, just 2 minutes, accompanied with horrible music. I like it, but that's another comment. Why did you put this crazy music? And I said, just put it to silent. It's just 2 minutes. Listen to your own music. Just watch the video. But people are so crazy. Yeah. I made an edited version 2 years ago, the exactly same video, but another music to test if it would be more popular. Now it's the first one. So I created kind of a demand for online tutorials. But mm-hmm. my problem is that I'm a perfectionist and I don't want to do those basic, you know, on YouTube, there are several links to wonderful people who explain how you can basically create pop-ups. And even on my page, you will find a long list which lead to other designers who release and who present how you can create a pop-up card. Mm-hmm. And so I once again try to find my niche and to not to just copy things from others. And so I tried to make pop-up cards. And here comes the problem. If it's cool enough that I can sell it, I will not give it away for free.
Right.
Sorry, fans out there. But if I can make this for a business, I will not give it away for free. Sometimes my designs are too complicated. And my clients say, oh, that's horrible. I can never produce it in a large number. That's how my Pioneer flower came to being as a tutorial. I thought some of my tutorials were so easy. Now it's time to do something crazy.
Yeah.
And people were already comparing this to those, what is the word? Honeycomb paper, when you can create very easy effect by honeycomb, just using honeycomb paper. I said, no. Look at, it's really, I don't know how many, but it's really tiny flowers in a pop-up card and you need probably 2 hours to create that. Right. I needed 3 or 4 days to create the video. That's my problem. I would love to create a new video tutorial each week, but it's impossible.
Yeah.
I need for the finding of the idea several days of doing nothing else but designing my new tutorial, and then to record it, I need to build it at least 3 times to make sure if I record, if I do all the movements right, if I'm doing the assembling process, you have to know where it's good to start. Usually, I don't. When I create the things for clients, they don't only get my vector data and my mock-up, but they will also receive detailed instructions, which part to insert first, which part to fold first and second step. But for a tutorial, you have to be so clear that I have to do it 5 times before I can record it. So it's a big mess and a big event. That's why I can do them so rarely. Sometimes it's a kind of a side project. I'm doing, a Christmas tree for a client in a way that can be produced. And I have another idea for a crazy idea that's too complicated. And that's how I made a Christmas tree tutorial. It consists of, I don't know, more than 18 pieces. Mm-hmm. But I think for the people who love to do things, something for themselves with their hands, it's a good project because each tree will look different if you use different paper.
Right. Do people send you pictures of what they make?
Yes. There's one thing that I would like to mention. Nowadays, since cutting plotters are more popular, right. I'm receiving requests if I could release just the vector data so that people can cut them out just by their machines. And to be honest, I don't like that because I don't want people to mass produce their pop-up right. cards.
Right.
So my newest tutorials, they don't even have concrete outlines, detailed outlines, but just I made a flower mm-hmm. and I explain how you can create your personal mm-hmm. shape of a flower by right. drawing it. And people are complaining, said, why don't you put online those existing flowers that you're showing? I said, no, it's, yeah. I want to invite you to be creative yourself.
Yeah.
It's just downloading something and sending it to a machine.
So right.
That's yeah. what I love on the process. And I think there are so many things that you already can download. And when I find a page that shares my plans on their website for free download, I always ask them to put that down. But because I told you, I put the tutorials online to give something back to the community. That's true, but it's also true that I know that it's, of course, advertising. Not
yeah.
the people who find my tutorials will hire me, but the search engine thinks I'm a good choice to be suggested. So if somebody searches for somebody who can do a pop-up, Google thinks, he's very popular on YouTube, yeah. so why don't you suggest his
right.
site?
Right, right,
so
right.
That's
right.
why I'm doing tutorials as well.
Yeah, that's very...
To be found.
Yeah, it's a nice circle that you've created.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. So let's end up with, I think recently I saw a promotional video that you made for real estate clients trying to get... you can tell me more. It was a very nice video.
Thank you. It was a test.
Okay.
Yes, it is what it is. It's a different kind of video. You know, in all the years before, in the first years, I just, if you look at that in that way, everything is a test because you never know.
Sure, right.
You cannot, even if somebody told me, make another video with those white pop-up sculptures, I actually did that about 1.5 years later. And while the first video has today more than 4.6 million views, the other version has, I don't know, 30,000, which is a lot, but you cannot compare
right.
it.
Right.
Even if you do two times the same, you mm-hmm. cannot make a prediction if mm-hmm. the second version will be as popular. So many of my videos just show my art or my project that I did for clients, mm-hmm. which is a kind of it's easier for me to do that because the objects are already there. I just have mm-hmm. to film them. I know that my community don't like them that much because they want tutorials. So the second version of videos is that I'm doing tutorials. Mm-hmm. And now a company that I'm working very close with, they have those laser cutting machines and they're connected to very big companies, their clients, the printing companies and owners of big brands. And so they have requests for architecture pop-ups. And they asked me, Peter, you have done so many different projects which involve architecture on your website. Mm-hmm. Can you just make a video which shows them all? And they initially just asked me to show them as a presentation video. And when I recorded all my projects, I did record even more than you can see in the video. Mm-hmm. And I made the edition, the editing in the video editing software. I found it myself so boring. I thought just showing them isn't good enough. You have to explain what's going on here. So I decided to record myself, which is very unusual. Usually you don't see me talking, just hear my voice. Mm-hmm. Maybe I say hi at the beginning and goodbye at the end, but you don't see me all the time. But I decided that I have to explain what you will see in the pack shots, in the recordings of the pop-ups. And so I sorted them, and I found that they have they can be assorted to, I don't know, 7 groups of pop-ups, mm-hmm. and it's just like an example. The example in this case is architecture, but in general, these different types of pop-ups, they appear everywhere when you have a new project.
Right.
And so I decided to explain what's going on here, and I was surprised that it was a little more popular on YouTube than some of my other videos, but actually it is already kind of disappearing. Of course, it's still there, but it was when I'm uploading something new,
right,
my subscribers see it within the first 3 or 4 days.
Right.
And then you need to be on the starting page of YouTube, or it has to be on the suggestion page. And this rarely happens. So it's like a lottery. You cannot force it.
Right, right. Wow.
So that's why this video is different. But I'm not sure if I should continue to make this kind of videos, because they're too special and they are for an audience who is more professional. And I think on YouTube, even if in my real life I'm talking a lot to professionals, in my YouTube and social media, I think it's more to people who want just to copy things, to create their own things. So I think for YouTube, it's not so popular to do these kind of things.
Right, right. Okay, and what's a project you're working on now that we can just wrap up with?
Well, actually, I finished a very rough mock-up for a design that I hope to be sending out to the Museum of Modern Art no later than in 3 weeks. But it's a rough version with the Christmas motif, because even if it's spring here, the cards are produced, as I said, the designing process starts very early, and when they might be buying it, it will be released no earlier than by next year. So please keep your fingers crossed. That's one project. And actually, to open one more window, I'm having an exhibition right now in the city where I'm living.
Right.
This doesn't show my commercial projects, but it's some art, pop-up sculptures as art, which is a field that is very special. So usually people create sculptures or pictures for the wall, but pop-up sculptures, that's something very special. And actually, with the grand opening today, it was 1 week ago, I actually sold 2 pieces, and I'm right now rebuilding them because they're from an edition. I said, okay, I will build no more than 20. So I'm right now building paper art, not as commercial things, but as artworks. That's what I'm doing right now. I have something in pieces here. Of course, you cannot show that to your audience, but it's
right.
Consists of some, I don't know, more than 80 or 90 pieces. And I think that this will keep me busy for the next 2 days, maybe 3.
Yeah. And so do you create additioned artwork? That's something else you do? Yeah.
Yes. But since there is no niche in the art scene, so there is no exhibition for this kind of stuff, really rarely people know that I'm doing these things. And from time to time, it happens that a collector contacts me and asks if he can buy or she can buy things. Mm-hmm. And really my answer is yes. But because there is this exhibition right now, now people notice. And so right. I requested to do things. But yes, I do this, but it's not very popular. And I don't do this very often. Maybe it's 3% of what I'm doing.
Right. Right. But I bet that that will pay off over time.
I hope so.
And I saw pictures of that, of the opening, and I couldn't tell. It looked like there were projections or something.
Yes. Oh, yes. And a good thing is, even if you cannot show it now, the video that I'm projecting there shows the actual pieces that are exhibited there, but people, of course, they are not allowed to touch them.
Right.
But I uploaded this video as well on YouTube, and this video is already very popular, so you can put a link. You can find it on my website, on my blog page. There is a link to this YouTube video. And that's a special way of presenting paper-engineered things, because usually they're locked up in acrylic boxes. On that space, there are no boxes. You just put them on a shelf, on a pedestal,
pedestal.
With a barrier. But people, of course, in theory, they could touch it if they bow over. But it's more, the atmosphere is more like a museum, so they don't actually touch it.
Right.
But to show that these are all pop-ups, we have a huge projection. The projector in that room is amazing, and it has a wonderful quality. And it's a double exhibition or dual exhibition together with the artist who creates sculptures from steel. So we have steel artworks and paper artworks.
Yeah.
And you see this big screen where you see, no, actually it's the wall, not a screen, where you see my pop-ups moving. Mm-hmm. And they're so huge on the wall that it's really amazing to see it live. And then you see these steel artworks, which are actually big. And the big projection, it's a nice combination. It's really wonderful to be there.
Well, and the video shows the movement too, which is something you can't experience if you can't touch it. So that's wonderful.
Yes. And it's during all the opening times, the video is not, it was not only shown during the opening ceremony, but when the museum is open,
right,
they show the video, right, which is absolutely necessary. Otherwise, people just walk by and say, oh, it's a paper sculpture. What's behind that? But when they see the movement, it's really,
fantastic.
Really amazed.
Okay, well, this has been really fun. And I want to just spell out your website so people can look it up if they're not going to go to their computer and type and look up your website. But it's Petra Dahmen, PETRDAHMEN.DE/EN if you want to read it in English. And everything else, your YouTube channel, you can find it with your name, right?
Yes, it's all connected. Yes,
it's all connected.
Everything.
Yeah, through the website. So thank you so much for coming on Paper Talk, and I look forward to seeing and hearing more about your work in the future.
Thank you, Helen, for the invitation. It was so wonderful to talk to you. Brilliant. Yeah. Have a nice day.
Okay, bye.
Hey, paper friends. Did you know that I write a weekly blog called The Sunday Paper, featuring stories of people doing exciting, innovative, and beautiful things with paper? Sign up at helenhebertstudio.com/blog. I'm also creating a lot of content over here, and the best way to stay up to date is to join my newsletter list to learn about free tutorials, online classes, workshops, and the annual Red Cliff Paper Retreat, which takes place right here at Helen Hebert Studio. You can sign up at helenhebertstudio.com to receive my e-newsletter. This wraps up our episode, and if you enjoyed it, I'd appreciate it if you could leave a review over on iTunes. This helps other people find out about the podcast. Special thanks to Gary A. Hansen for the sound editing and Peter Thomas for the music. Visit helenhebertstudio.com and click on Paper Talk, where you can find out more about them, subscribe to the series via iTunes, and listen to other episodes and access all of the archived shows. I'll talk to you soon.
There's a reason besides the season, the making paper.